oil prices and the new Venezuela oil sanctions. I'm David Brancaccio. The price of crude oil is up 2.6% to $53.32 a barrel now. This with new U.S. sanctions on Venezuela, the oil-rich country where the economy is already in deep disarray under the policies of President Nicolas Maduro. His leadership is being challenged by an opposition leader favored by the Trump administration. The main lever here, cash from Venezuelan oil sales to the U.S., would be held in escrow. Venezuela is America's fourth largest foreign oil supplier, but it's down to just 6% of U.S. imports. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin implied yesterday that the sanctions will not destabilize prices.
I'm sure many of our friends in the Middle East will be happy to make up the supply as we push down Venezuela's supply.
For more, let's go to Risa Grace Targo, Latin America Director at the political risk consultancy, the Eurasia Group. Thanks for connecting.
Thanks for having me.
So as we try to parse these new Venezuela sanctions, the U.S. Treasury Secretary thinks the Mideast could make up for lost supply. You think that's the case?
So it's true that there are heavy barrels currently going to Asia that could come to Gulf Coast refiners. The issue is that Venezuela is going to have to send its barrels to refineries in India and China. Those are the only other refineries in the world that can handle Venezuela's particular type. They're going to need to send those barrels there and displace Middle Eastern heavy crudes, but that would free up those crudes to then come to the U.S.
Now, what about this matter of China taking up the slack here, buying more Venezuelan oil? The thing is, they tend not to pay cash when they buy Venezuelan oil, the Chinese.
That's going to be an issue that the government is going to have to work out with China. In the past, the government has repeatedly sought flexibility on existing loans to send China fewer barrels. So the government is now going to have to see if they'll take more barrels and give them cash. But certainly that's going to require some negotiation with their Chinese counterparts.
And you mentioned India. They have the refineries that could take this type of oil. They do pay cash. I suppose the Indians could drive a harder bargain knowing there's this extra oil out there looking for a home.
Absolutely. PDVSA is not going to have leverage in these talks. Again, they're going to need to charge enough of a discount on their barrel to displace those Middle Eastern heavy crudes that are currently being processed in India and China, not to mention much higher transportation costs, right? So clearly the refineries in India and China are going to be the ones with the upper hands in these negotiations.
Risa Grace Targo is Latin America Director at the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
About 800,000 federal employees missed two paychecks during the government shutdown. Now the scramble's on to get their back pay, hopefully, by the end of this week. Marketplace's Renata Sago has more.
Before President Trump announced the end of the shutdown, he'd signed a bill that gives back pay to furloughed federal workers. The head of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick Mulvaney, said on Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation that he expects employees will see their paychecks this week.
Some of them may be later this week, but we hope that by the end of this week, all of the back pay will be made up. And of course, the next payroll will go out on time.
Regular paydays for more than 2 million federal employees are massive undertakings, but the system is nimble. Richard Loeb is senior counsel with the American Federation of Government Employees. He says normally the government is able to pay workers within 96 hours of receiving payroll information, but he thinks some federal employees may not even have to wait that long.
The executive branch agencies of the government were working all weekend to make the payroll entries.
Some federal employees will get their back pay in two paychecks, according to union officials. Others will get it as one lump sum. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors contributed over the last year for helping keep public service journalism strong. All of us really appreciate your support. We've been looking at America's low birth rate from several angles this month. A recent government report shows that the country's birth rate in 2017 was below the threshold for replacing the number of people dying. The birth rate for some groups, including Hispanic women, are converging with the lower rates among white women. Today, a discussion of demographics with Jack Goldstone, George Mason University professor of public policy. He spoke with Marketplace's Sabri Benashour.
What we see with regard to fertility, it's very much a question of desired lifestyle. We see more and more women, whether they are immigrant, minority, seeking to pursue a situation of greater autonomy and greater participation in the workforce. And the more women engage in the workforce, the more they develop career ambitions, the fewer children they tend to have.
Do we actually need a stable or growing population?
It depends on your goals. If you want to have an economy that's fast-growing and competitive, you need more young workers, you need more high-skill, top-of-their-game, energetic entrepreneurs and workers. And to get those, we need either higher birth rates or more generous immigration policy.
There are people out there who complain or are fearful of immigration because they say or are afraid that it in some capacity might take jobs from Americans. But you're pointing out that we need immigration to fill the gap in our fertility rate.
If our unemployment rate was still at 10%, I would say, hey, maybe it's time to hold the line on immigration. That's not the world we live in. We're living in a world where the biggest problem of employers is finding people to do the jobs that are open. It's also the case that our population is aging. The more young people, in a sense, the faster we grow. And we're in a world where young people who can be productive workers are the new scarce resource. More than capital, more than oil, more than rare metals, productive young people are going to be the key to growth.
Jack Goldstone, a professor of public policy at George Mason, speaking with Marketplace's Sabri Benashour. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.